This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
Welcome to The Infected.
Hey there, thanks for joining us. You're listening to The Infected, a podcast from the heart of night. My name is Goof, and I'm here with Jeroen, my fellow creature of the night. I'm sure you're familiar with us by now. It's now midnight on Monday, the 10th of August, and it's still soaring hot during the heat wave that's going on in the Netherlands. So let's start off with some cold, refreshing, and great music by New Order.
Infected.
That's an awesome song, man. It's a great find, or maybe it's not a find. Maybe it's one of those songs that you've been keeping with you traveling through time. Or is this something you dug up recently?
The song is called Chosen Time, so that's a... I'm not sure if you did it consciously, that comment, or by accident, but it's very fitting. Now, this is a track that stuck with me through the years. Play it a lot of times during the year at certain moments. It comes up in specific playlists that I put it in. But I thought it was time to give New Order a beautiful stage in our podcast. Some background on New Order and this track, Jeroen, because I think it deserves it. From the tragedy of Ian Curtis's suicide at the age of only 23 years old emerged a defining group in the 80s, combining poppy elements with edgy and catchy sounds. That's, of course, New Order I'm talking about. And the album that the track this is on, it's called Movement, sounded like and in fact is born from the ashes of Joy Division. So it also has one leg in what New Order would become and would sound like later, while still having one leg in the old Joy Division sound. So it's kind of dark and moody, as you hear, even though it's mostly electronic and not that much of a rock album, or rock song, if you will. It is still very somber sounding, and that's a good thing in my book. We were just talking over this track. Jeroen also mentioned that it's not a track that you will know. It doesn't stick with you, but it's still a good one, I think, right?
Yeah, definitely, and it's interesting because they're experimenting a bit, I think, with the sound spectrum, where Joy Division was very much a format, you know, which was the songs were excellent and the atmosphere was amazing and repressive and intriguing at the same time. But basically, the band mostly did the same thing.
Yeah,
the bass player played the bass notes, etc.
Yes. Yeah.
So they're moving stuff around, you know, in the spectrum. You know, the bass player trying to hit the high notes, and the bass line coming from the keyboards. Guitar is there constantly, but also very rhythmically and subdued.
Yeah.
And every now and then it sort of sneaks out a couple of notes, which gives it definitely a different feel from where they departed from with Joy Division.
Yes. I think you're absolutely right, and your comments also made me discover new things in this song, that, like that bass line, I never thought about that. If you listen to the track, it feels kind of repetitive maybe, but there's a lot going on. And at the time of the release of this track and the album Movements from 1981, the album was not super well received by critics or audiences. It only peaked at number 30 on the UK album charts, for instance. However, it has always surprised me that people criticize Movement, the album that this is on again, for being dreary and unenergized, when it's just that exact aesthetic that Joy Division used and elaborated on. It sounded a bit like Joy Division would have evolved even with Ian Curtis on board, maybe. It's not a rock album, but the sound and the feel is quite similar, to be honest. And, well, I think with all things considered, it's still a great and essential album in the rich history of post-punk. And there are quite a few songs on this album which are written about Ian Curtis. That shouldn't be a surprise, because it's the first album after he deceased at only 23 years old. There are other great tracks to be enjoyed on this album. Certainly I would check out ICB, which is short for Ian Curtis Buried. It's kind of a sinister title, but quite an interesting background. And the other song, The Hymn, is very interesting, and all the lyrics that you will hear are, they're an homage to Ian. And eventually the New Order sound would evolve as we taking up influences from Italo disco, or at least disco, which led to the recording of their hits Temptation and Blue Monday. And a fun fact, the tempo in this song, it's all electronic that we just played. Pieces of this track were reused to build the song Blue Monday. Yeah, there we go. New Order for you.
So thanks. A really interesting track, really, from where they were coming from. You feel it's more rhythmical than what they've done before. They're experimenting with sound a bit.
Yeah.
There's more drive to it. And you can hear that they're a band in transition from one sound into, you know, uncharted territory. And I think it's that makes it a really interesting track. So thanks for sharing, man.
Welcome. Yeah, totally agree. It's a transition album.
And I guess nobody understood where they were going, because they were really, you know, headed for new things, which is maybe harder for people that were expecting, you know, more of the same from a band. So I always feel that if an album by a really great band doesn't do so well when it's launched, it's usually because they're doing more interesting stuff than just repeating themselves. So that's always something to look out for.
True that.
Style, outcast.
the music we pick usually has this dark edge.
Yes.
And the next track definitely also fits that definition. I want to play a track by Fantogram. Have you ever heard of Fantogram?
I haven't, June. No.
So Fantogram is an American electronic duo from New York, Greenwich, actually. They consist of Josh Carter and Sarah Barthel. When they joined in 2007, they largely kept their experiments and their music to themselves. They were a bit shy. They did confide in one another, obviously, and they recorded for almost 3 years. Until by 2009, a duo did something that many musicians seem to have done. They set themselves on a street corner and just started giving away free CDs.
Free? Okay, cool.
Yeah, with two tracks. And as Josh recalls, they would tell passersby, "Hey, here, listen, there are two songs, listen to them. If you need a coaster for your coffee, it's also okay, then you can use it as that."
Don't take it too seriously, but at the same time, yeah, trying to get it out there, nice.
Yeah, yeah, and they managed to get it out there because they've been together for 13 years now. They've recently released an album, a new album. And the track I want to play is from an album from 2016. And definitely this duo is not afraid to touch on darker topics in their songs. As Sarah, who sings most of the songs, says, "We definitely tend to gravitate toward writing more on the darker side of life. But we do also incorporate the light at the end of the tunnel. You can always find positives in it. Music for us is very therapeutic. It's very cathartic. We're not a band that wants to write about how the sun is shining and life is beautiful. We're not as direct as that. We tend to use our music as therapy in a way. You can definitely hear it on our records." This is Ceremony by Fantogram.
Hold me, I'm a miracle. Hold me, I'm a miracle.
Yeah.
Well, Jeroen, this is something. It starts off really slow with a low volume as well, and then completely evolves into a chaotic and dramatic, beautiful mess. I love this. It's got some soul, I think, and without the distorted resonant tone in the end, because that's just cold and a nice ending. But it's an interesting track.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and it really grabs you by the throat when you lie down, put your headphones on, and let this track take you with it. You go to a dark place, and it's cleverly disguised as a very light sort of summery song in the beginning, but there's a story behind it and behind all of this album. This is from the album Ceremony, and you can hear frontwoman Sarah Barthel sounding very melancholic. The sister of Sarah, Becky, lost her life due to suicide in January 2016 after struggling with depression for many years.
Oh, that's sad.
And if you realize that, the lyrics take on a deeper meaning. So this album was produced shortly after she lost her sister.
Yeah.
She herself says it's definitely a reflection. I think all of the songs are a reflection of what happened. It was inspired by Becky, but it was also just inspired by life. It's about trying to live and go on after you lose somebody to suicide.
Well, yeah, that's quite deep.
It is. I think the lyrics are beautiful as well. Animate my lonely solo ceremony, insomniac, come back.
Wow. It almost feels like these stages of grief that one goes through, but all crammed into 5 minutes. There's a lot of emotion and pureness going on. And well, that's what I love about doing this podcast with you. And just those stories behind it that give these songs so much more meaning. They're great in their own right if you listen to them on Spotify, but this is what we like to do, I guess. Give it all the context.
When you find these stories behind songs that you love, they take on more meaning, and it's great to be able to share that with you and anybody who is willing to tune in and listen to what these artists have to say, really, because we're just retelling the stories.
Yeah, great find, Jeroen. Great fucking find.
Thanks.
It's quite a transition, actually, to go from this beauty and sad and layered track to go to something that's really cold and raw and minimalistic as this next track by Ende Schneevliet. It's a Dutch band, and the song is called Zeitgeist. Let us first maybe listen to it, and I'll tell you a bit afterwards. Does that make sense?
Yeah, great. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go.
Thank you.
Well, Jeroen, what did you think of this raw piece of action?
Well, this is a really interesting track in the sense that after a while you start thinking, okay, where can I place this? How old is it? What phase was it recorded? Basically, it's recorded pretty shittily. Sound quality is definitely not up there.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like it could be quite old, actually.
Yeah.
I found it very hard to pigeonhole where it would fit in musical history. And I did like the track, so tell me more.
Good to hear. Yeah, I have to agree, because the first time I heard it, I couldn't also place it in a certain time period. Kind of reminds me of the track by Grauzon we used
yeah.
a couple of episodes earlier, Film 2, that was really old but sounds quite new.
Yeah, I get that.
This is from, I believe, 1982, and it was recorded on cassette, so the shitty sound quality is so obscure that they only released it on cassette. I'll tell you a little bit about the background. So I'm keeping it close to home with this third track. So 5 kilometers away from my home, literally, because I'm living in the coastal village of Bergen. That's on the northwest coast of Holland. And 5 kilometers away is the village that is called Heilo. You're familiar with it, Jeroen?
No, never heard of it.
No, you shouldn't be, because it's quite dull and uneventful sleeping village. Anyway, it's round the corner. We do our groceries there, and there's nothing happening. But in the early 80s, there were 4 guys that formed the band Ende Schneevliet. Sounds German, but they're 4 Dutch guys. And they were part of the obscure and kind of legendary record label Trumpet Records. And they were only releasing post-punk and dark electronics on that label. And experimental stuff as well. That's what you hear in this track as well, because it takes 3.5 minutes, like you just mentioned, to evolve and go somewhere.
Yeah.
But it never really takes off. It just sticks within this mood. And these guys and the Schneevliet, these 4 guys, have only been active between 1981 and 83. Yeah, they only released some cassettes. That's what the sound quality comes from. And you cannot find a better download quality than this or listening experience, because it's all jack old.
Yeah.
And it's so obscure that they only did 1 concert on a public broadcaster program in 1983 on VPRO. And that's basically all I can find about them. I can find a little bit more about this label I just mentioned, Trumpet Records. There are also other artists that are a bit more familiar. Doxa Sinistra, the actor Dr. C. Stein, which I will definitely use in an upcoming show, because he uses Blade Runner samples in his music. And also the music is very, very interesting. I think he's the most memorable of all these acts on this label, to be honest. And there's also 9 Circles. On this label. They're still active. They're also on Spotify.
Awesome.
Yeah, from the late 80s, it turned quiet around this record label. And in that period, work was done behind the scenes to preserve the very impressive archive of sound and images they had accumulated, because they had a lot of acts on this label. And it's actually 1,250 items long, this list of releases.
Wow.
I will also place a link on our website after the show within the show notes, so you can look up more stuff on Trumpet Records. And one final interesting fact, in recent years they took up an old World War II bunker on Texel. And Texel is a small peninsula on the north coast of the Netherlands. They turned it into a studio. So they took a bunker, they got it from the government, they turned it into a studio, and they just started cataloging all of their music. And yeah. Let me stop rambling here. It's a cold wave label, and Ende Schneevliet didn't do anything except this track that is worth listening to, in my opinion. But I just wanted to share this powerful track.
Yeah, it's interesting enough. Definitely something out of the ordinary, and something that I don't think many of our listeners will have heard before. So thanks for sharing that. My question is, if you live like 5 kilometers from this guy that you think is so interesting, didn't you already try and look him up or get a beer together with him?
That's a very good idea, Jeroen. I didn't get to it, but I should, because all of these guys on this label, Trumpet, they're around my area, so it's not more than 15 kilometers away. I think most of them are still alive and approachable. Would be nice.
Yeah, definitely. So your mission is to drink beer with as many people from this label as possible and report on it for our listeners, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely sure that these guys are going to be amazed when they hear that somebody has been recently, you know, listening to their 1981 track, actually played it in a podcast. I think that's going to be...
Yeah.
They're going to love that story as well, man.
Yeah.
Definitely.
What a punishment.
All right. So we're going to hear back on that.
Do you dream of a vacation at the bottom of the ocean? But you can't float the bill? Have you always wanted to climb the mountains of Mars? But now you're over the hill? Then come to Recall Incorporated, where you can buy the memory of your ideal vacation cheaper, safer, and better than the real thing. So don't let life pass you by. Call Recall for the memory of a lifetime.
For the memory of a lifetime. Recall.
Indeed, it is time for our special feature, the Infected Trifecta. Shortly, we will play three songs that share a certain connection. If you like a puzzle, see if you can find how they are related. The connection could be anything, for instance, a lyrical theme, something to do with the band members, instruments, anything goes. We'll introduce the first song, then play all three back to back. See if you can figure out what the connection between these three songs is before the end of the back to back section. We'll tell you right after.
The Infected Trifecta.
I have unearthed something which is somewhat of an audio delicacy. So this is a song by The Cult, and the song is called Electric Ocean. A couple of listeners are already going to be disappointed because they think, oh, I know Electric Ocean. But wait, there's a story here. So let's go back to 1985. The album Love had been a success for The Cult. The single She Sells Sanctuary had even turned into a modest hit. So they were doing a tour. I actually visited Pinkpop in the Netherlands as well in 1986. And when they were playing and touring, Ian Astbury mentioned that the band would also play a new song called Electric Ocean. So this song was out on the soundtrack to a film called Out of Bounds. But Ian mentioned that he thought the song was a hell of a lot better than the movie.
Yeah.
Already on stage.
Have you seen the movie?
No, I found a review which sort of put me off trying to look for it too much.
Okay.
Anyway, so they did the Love tour, right? And in the summer of 1986, the band went into the Manor studio in Oxfordshire.
Yeah.
And they went there again with producer Steve Brown, who had also been responsible for the production of the Love album. The band stayed at Manor for 3 months in the luxurious environment. They got everything they wanted. They had a good time. But when the 11 songs had been recorded for this album, which was supposed to be called Peace, it just did not feel right to the band. The songs were okay, but they were sprawling and the sound wasn't quite right. And singer Ian Astbury had heard recent productions by Rick Rubin and was convinced that the band needed his more raw and direct sound. So this band asked Rick Rubin to remix Love Removal Machine, which was going to be the first single.
Mm-hmm.
Rubin agreed, but on one condition. He asked from their current sessions that the band had to pick the song that they were least satisfied with, and Rubin would then re-record and produce the song, because he wanted to show off what he could do. So the band picked the song Peace Dog. They loved working with Rubin, and eventually the whole album they were done at Manor was re-recorded with production by Rick Rubin, and a lot of songs were changed. The production was changed dramatically. So the Manor sessions were shelved, and Electric, the Rubin album, was released in 1987. And Electric was the real breakthrough album for The Cult. And the first single, Love Removal Machine, was a huge hit. However, many old-time fans were disappointed when Electric was released because it really sounded like a hard rock album. It no longer had the post-punk feel that so many loved of The Cult. It's logical, right? Because at that time, Rick Rubin had done Slayer, he had done the Beastie Boys. He was definitely not a typical post-punk type of producer.
Mm.
So the song we're about to play is Electric Ocean, and of this song, there are actually three different versions. So there's the version from the Manor sessions, which is less energetic, and then there's the Out of Bounds soundtrack version of this track, which is the basis from the Manor sessions, but it was, you know, produced and beefed up for the soundtrack. And then there's the Rubin version of this track, which ended up on the Electric album. But the version that Rick Rubin did is about 2 minutes shorter, and it sounds quite different. And this extremely rare Out of Bounds version is what you'll be hearing in a minute. And now the whole movie soundtrack is actually awesome, with contributions by Susie, Adam Ant, and the Smiths, just to name a few, but it's impossible to get your hand on it.
Yeah.
So this version of Electric Ocean was released only ever on the rare Cult 7 CD box. It was a box set, an expensive collector's item released in very limited numbers and only in the USA in the year 2000. So this version is really something you will hear nowhere on any streaming service. It's extremely hard to find, but it is the best version of the song. And it's also probably the last song recorded with the original Cult sound, signifying the end of the post-punk phase of the Cult, which makes this track even more special. So here it is. Enjoy Electric Ocean.
Factor. Infected Trifecta.
Undead.
The Infected Trifecta.
Did you find the connection? Well done if you did. These three songs are all movie related, appearing respectively in the movies Out of Bounds, Thief, and The Hunger.
So the next one we just played is a custom-made edit I did by Tangerine Dream. It's a blend of the two tracks that are on the Thief soundtrack. That's the soundtrack by the movie from 1981 by Michael Mann. And, well, it's maybe six tracks in total on this soundtrack, but it's just so grand. I couldn't make a decision, so I blended the two tracks into one. Tangerine Dream was a German electronic band founded in 1967 by Edgar Froese, and I'm sure most listeners know Tangerine Dream. This group has seen many personnel changes over the years, and they've been around for a long time. One famous member that was very successful in this band, but also when going solo, was Klaus Schulze. And Edgar Froese, the founder of this band, was the only continuous member, basically, until his death in January of 2015. And, well, Tangerine Dream sounds exotic and dreamy. The band name comes from a mishearing of the line "Tangerine Trees and Marmalade Skies" from the Beatles track "Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds." So if you hear that line and you're just not paying attention, or you're fucked up by alcohol or whatever you're doing,
LSD,
then you make it into LSD probably. "Tangerine Dreams and Marmalade Skies" certainly become Tangerine Dream. And the band originated in krautrock and psychedelica, and Edgar Froese soon became more interested in electronic instruments during the 70s, and also making his own electronic instruments, which reminds me a bit of Kraftwerk, because they also tended to make their own electronic instruments. But in 1973, when they were doing their most of their stuff electronically, they signed with the Virgin Records label and started using the Mellotron, which is a famous instrument. It's not an easy one to use, but famous, yeah, right? And the Moog synthesizers, the famous powerful bass from the Moog, the Mini Moog. And they rose to great success in the coming years, in the 80s. They made a lot of movie soundtracks as well. More recently, they did this score for the video game Grand Theft Auto V. They're on Spotify as well with a lot of their work. And there's also a link, because the edit that I made with the movie soundtrack from Thief, that's a good reason to revive our section, The Big Picture, in which we make goth-approved movie tips.
Yeah.
The Big Picture.
It's a very rare movie, because you can't find it anywhere, actually. If you want to watch it right now, you probably have to buy it on Amazon or on DVD or Blu-ray. But Michael Mann is a person that you do know. Michael Mann is the famous director of Miami Vice and also the movie Heat from 1995. You probably know Heat from the amazing shootout scene on the streets after a bank robbery with no music and just the sound of rifles and violence going on.
Yeah.
Right? But Michael Mann actually made his debut in 1981 with Thief, which featured James Caan as a leading actor.
Nice debut,
right?
Yeah.
And he's a badass, James Caan, as well as Michael Mann, by the way. But James Caan was also a badass, obviously, in Godfather. And Thief is about a diamond jewelry heist man that falls in love and then defeats all his enemies and lives happily ever after. It feels a bit similar to De Niro's character in Heat, was also a robber, falls in love, but he dies in the end. So James Caan did a little bit better. These robbery themes and heist themes, they're big in the Michael Mann oeuvre. And the soundtrack of Tangerine Dream accompanying Thief, they cannot be separated. They're equally important. It's right up there with the Blade Runner soundtrack, if you ask me. And I hope Tangerine Dream got paid well, because they're equally important. Tension builds up and it makes me want to drill a safe or rob a bank or something. Tangerine Dream.
Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
The Infected Trifecta.
Bela Lugosi is dead.
9 minutes. It flew by. It just flew by. It can't get enough. It's also summer feeling. There's a bit of dub feeling going on in the background. It feels light, but at the same time, really heavy.
Yeah, it's definitely true what you're saying. There's this sort of reference to dub reggae sort of band echo sounds going on.
Mm-hmm.
And this song, you know, we're talking about goth often, and we have a lot of goth-influenced tracks.
Mm-hmm.
This song is widely considered to be the absolute start of gothic rock music, and it has been immensely influential on the contemporary goth culture. So it's from 1979, yeah?
Ooh.
I just want to quote from a book.
Mm-hmm.
The book is called Bela Lugosi is Dead, 30 Years of Goth Gloom and Post-Punk. They say Bela Lugosi is Dead is roundly established by goth historians as the first true record in the genre. For comparison's sake, goth icons The Cure and Susie and the Banshees were certainly releasing records at the same time that Bauhaus delivered its premiere single, but the aforementioned bands did not go full on goth until 1980-81.
Mm-hmm.
The song also precedes all the earlier recognized alt-rock masterworks.
No.
So this is the first true goth record. Now, you can say, okay, this is somebody who wrote the book, but I want to quote The Guardian as well. Guardian once wrote an article called Bauhaus Invented Goth. The Northampton's band debut single seemed an improbable template for other bands to follow. A gloomy, descending bass line repeating for the best part of 10 minutes with a drum pattern and a preponderance of echoing effects, evidently derived from dub reggae, topped with jaggedly abstract guitar noise. Bela Lugosi's Dead would have been just another piece of post-punk experimentation had it not been for the lyrics, which depict the funeral of the Dracula star, with bats swooping and virgin brides marching past his coffin. The effect was so irresistibly theatrical that dozens of bands formed in its wake. So many, in fact, that goth quickly became a very codified musical genre.
Thank God for that. 1979. I didn't realize it was that old. That was the punk scene was starting to die down, and that's when this track came about.
Yeah.
Maybe in that area. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And this is the first time that this whole recipe of the sort of gloomy atmosphere and all the references to vampires, funerals, coffins and, you know, virgin brides, all of that very quickly became the lexicon that you had to use if you wanted to be part of this movement, right? So they basically delivered the blueprint in this song that everybody started working from. I found a fantastic interview, which was done only a year ago.
Yeah.
Everybody from the Bauhaus band, as well as the guy who actually published this song, the label owner, Pete Stennett. And I don't want to give you some quotes from that, because there's no way anybody can tell the story better than these. The way that these guys are looking back from a distance of 40 years, Peter Murphy, the singer, is in no doubt about the significance of this debut single. It just happened to be a seminal song, he said. It turned out to be the Stairway to Heaven of the 1980s. Drummer Kevin Haskins agrees. It definitely has a timeless quality. On reflection, I marvel at what we did. We were just four young kids who wanted to make something unique without really having much idea what we were doing. And that song just came out of it. It was recorded in January 1979 after the band's first ever studio session. And Bela Lugosi's Dead is really a masterclass in experimental post-punk. They were rejected by various labels, and in the end it was left to Small Wonder, a small indie label based in Walthamstow, to release Bela Lugosi's Dead as a 12-inch single in August 79. So Pete Stennett, who was the label owner at Small Wonder, said he wanted to put it out, and we asked him, "Do you think it's too long?"
What?
Here's what Pete said. "I didn't give a fuck how long it was. Often in those days especially, you'd be thinking that nobody was going to play it on the radio, with the exception of John Peel. Everything we released, I felt confident and comfortable with. And when I heard Bela Lugosi's Dead, I thought, shit, this is good. And I wanted to share it." So Kevin, the drummer, says, "Pete was a very important figure in our evolution. When he told us he was interested, we all traveled down to his shop in Walthamstow. He closed up and said, 'There's something really intriguing about this song, but I haven't made up my mind yet. I need to listen to it one more time.' So there we were, standing in his shop. He put the record on, and 9 minutes seemed like 9 hours. At the end, he took the needle off, looked at us and said, 'Yeah, I want to put this out.' When we left the shop, we all ran down Ho Street, jumping up and down like kids who just got out of school for the summer. It was so exciting." Pete Stennett says, "It was just beautifully produced, and there was this reggae feel to it. They hadn't been playing together for more than 5 minutes, but they were very tight. I had Bela Lugosi's Dead pressed up within weeks. Though why I decided to release the first 5,000 12 inches on white vinyl, I shall never know."
That's
so Pete Murphy, he adds that they were driving back from Walthamstow with their copies just after the single had been pressed.
Yeah.
And they decided to stop off at the BBC. So they went to the BBC's building, they walked up to the reception, and they passed Motorhead on their way out.
No way.
They said, "Hello, we're Bauhaus, and we're friends of John Peel. We'd like to go up, please." And somehow they were allowed up there, and were able to put the record in front of him. And after they'd all introduced themselves, he said on air, "We got Bauhaus in the studio, they're from Northampton, and they have a new single out called Bela Lugosi's Dead. It's 9.5 minutes long, and this will probably be the first and the last time I'll play this."
Oh, man, what a story.
And then the band had to leave, and they went down to listen to it in the car. And apparently the BBC switchboard was jammed with listeners wanting him to play it again.
So it wasn't the last time. No, it was the first time, but not the last time, no. Obviously. No.
Being played on Peel, though, was the key that opened a lot of doors for them. Shortly after that, yeah. We got a request to do a session for him, which was a really big deal for us. Then we got a residency at a club in London called Billy's, which later became the Batcave. So Ian Curtis came down one night, and he told us how much he loved Bela Lugosi's Dead, which was a real kick for us to hear. So this single, it completely missed the mainstream chart, but it remained on the independent listings for over 2 years, and the status was cemented by Bauhaus's memorable rendition during the opening scene of Tony Scott's 1983 film The Hunger.
Yes, yes.
I think one of the band's key inspirations, David Bowie.
So, exactly. You have David Bowie and Peter Murphy in one movie, which is epic enough as it is. It's about a love triangle between vampires, worthwhile. But Jeroen, what a background. I didn't know this. I love this. Peter Murphy, the singer of Bauhaus, if you listen to him, he's got a voice that's really going for it. It's not acted, it's not pretentious, it's just pure, like there's no tomorrow. He can also be stated the godfather of God, if you ask me, hearing this story.
Yeah, definitely. And it's true. He just totally, you know, goes with the atmosphere of the music, and he doesn't hold back, and he just, you know, flows with it. But just to think that this is not something which was well thought through, but just a couple of guys who hadn't played together a lot at all, just jamming and coming up with this song, and then the impact that it has, you know, all the hundreds of bands that are still working within the blueprint that came into being in this happy incident.
Yeah, yeah.
To pick up another term which we used recently, this is probably one of the happiest accidents
yes,
has been recorded.
Like Bob Ross is making happy accidents and making great paintings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the happy goth accident.
Legendary.
The Infected.
So we've reached the end of our show again. I hope you liked this episode. I sure loved making it, and I know Gove did too, right?
Absolutely, Jeroen. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so you don't want to miss these, right? You don't want to miss these stories. You don't want to miss these episodes. So there's a very simple thing you can do. Just subscribe to our podcast and never miss another one. If you want to do that, just go to our awesome site at theinfected.nl. I will now give you 666 reasons why it's a good idea to visit theinfected.nl. Nah, just kidding, but there's a couple here. Because here you will find the links to subscribe, but also we offer some great Spotify playlists in the spirit of The Infected. We have lots of music inspiration there for you, and also a fine collection of all the songs we've ever played on the show. Also, on theinfected.nl, the show notes of each episode with the stories and the relevant links, in case you want to reread them or share them. Not to be missed, we also feature some exclusive interviews with artists from the scene. Just last week we had Golden Plates, who did a great interview, a very interesting act. Check them out as well.
Hey y'all, this is Alder Branson with Golden Plates, and you are listening to The Infected.
Theinfected.nl also brings you fully mixed sets of music, great for hours of continuous listening. And also, if you'd like to get in touch, say hi, or suggest or even introduce a track that you think should be on this show, reach out to us. Theinfected.nl also has a contact form you can use to reach us. If you enjoyed the show, you can help us out with a nice rating on Spotify, Google, or iTunes. Choose your poison. And that's all for now. Thanks for listening. It has been a terribly sweaty night, so I long for nothing more than to recede down the stairs into the crypt, go lie down, and close the coffin for the rest of the night. Stay cool.
Listening to some cold wave in your coffin.